Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
And the song fades out at probably like the coolest part of that song too, with all the chunka chunka chunka. It's awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you couldn't tell from that intro, we've got David from the vocalist of Fear Before the March of Flames, and he's got a new project called Memory Drip, which we're going to talk about as well. But so much to talk about, you know, not only in the realm of hockey, but just such a career with Fear Before. I mean, like, you guys put out 4 records over like 6 years and had such a paradigm shift in music from that first record to the last one, even, you know, with changing the name, you know, dropping the, you know, the March of Flames and stuff like that. I guess that's where I'll start, just because that's a question that's always kind of been interesting to me. What made you guys decide to drop the whole band name and just go with Fear Before for that last record?
Well, I think we changed a lot as people, mm-hmm. and musically as well. I think we thought we earned it, and kind of grew as people too. And that kind of wears you down, a little bit. I think we kind of grew up in the suburbs and, you know, the Christian Catholic upbringings that we were brought up in, and whether we wanted it or, you know, grew out of it, you just changed. And I just think that it's just different. That fear of,
yeah,
of who you were raised as, and it's just not who we were when we started.
Sure.
And I think there is a detachment that, mm-hmm. we felt that we earned, and everybody called us Fear Before anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, like, oh, and when we changed it, it was like, oh, I liked you better when you were FBTMOF. It's like, yeah, well, you can't even say it once.
So. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, like, you have to abbreviate it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it was a mistake. I still think that if we came back today, I think we would still call ourselves Fear Before the March of Flames. Honestly, so it was a lofty goal.
Sure.
It sucks to talk about this as an unfinished entity, mm-hmm. because in my head, I wanted it to be 4 self-titled releases. So,
wow,
it was, okay, supposed to be Fear Before, and then it was supposed to be the March of Flames, and then it was supposed to be Fear Before the March of Flames. It was supposed to be like literally like a,
that's
bunch, of self-titled things, and it was supposed, yeah, to be 4 of them.
Wow.
So we only got through 1 of them.
Yeah.
it's hard to talk about because it just didn't see itself to fruition.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's unfinished. It's just like in the past.
Like, so I guess it's like, but it's like a never say never sort of thing, right? Like, you know,
I feel like music and bands should never go on hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
It's music should just exist.
Sure.
And you could take 5 years, you could take 10 years, you could take 20 years. Yeah. It's just, if you have something to say, you can put it out. And sure. And you don't have time, it's a sand through an hourglass. And that's kind of like what my new band Memory Drip is. Literally the name Memory Drip is, you know, sand through the hourglass. Sure. It's like, it's just time, and it's it is what it is.
Sure. So yeah, let's kind of explore a little bit about Memory Drip. So, you know, again, my ignorance and not having a chance to have heard it yet. You know, what are we expecting? Like, as far as, the kind of music it is it as, you know, like aggressive or experimental as, you know, Fear Before was, or is it a little bit more straightforward? What kind of music is driving Memory Drip?
So this project, I will say that I had no expectations of ever putting music out ever again.
Oh, wow.
I was not pursuing it in the slightest. And during the pandemic, do you know the band Teenage Wrist?
Oh yeah, love them.
So during the pandemic, I was watching YouTube, and I was watching a Teenage Wrist live YouTube thing. Mm-hmm. And Marshall, the singer guitar player, was reaching down to his pedal board, and he had a Fear Before tattoo on his arm. And
that.
He had just taken over full-time vocally. And so the bass player, Cam, Cam and Marshall are from Colorado. I had never really like talked or
crossed paths formally, with them.
Formally like met Marshall, really. Like we had talked, but like I never really knew who he was. And I just was like, hey, I know you took over vocally fully, and I just really like your new record. And he was like, yeah. Hey, what are you doing musically? Do you want to do anything? And I was just like, hey, man, if you want to do anything, I would do something if it was with you. And that's kind of just how it started. And The Teenage Wrist guys play with 303, that hip hop
like power poppy group. Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember them.
I never thought that band would be mentioned twice in a row. Like literally on our last episode, they came up as well.
That's so funny.
So funny.
They were playing like a Red Rock show. It was still during the pandemic. It was like half capacity Red, even though it's outside. It was still during the pandemic.
Sure.
And he was like, I'll come out a couple days early and see if we can write a song or something.
Oh, that's sick. That's awesome. And
like, if we mesh or anything. Mm-hmm. And we wrote a song. We wrote Teacher Nurse. It was one of the songs on our EP.
Cool.
And we wrote that song in a day. And that was the first thing we did. And
awesome.
That's like the beginning of our band. Mm-hmm. So this is just like very really cool thing, and it's like the first thing I've done in over a decade. So
sure.
I just really didn't think that It was like one of those things where you just kind of lie to yourself and say, I don't want to, just because like opportunities don't arise, you kind of just say, I don't want to do it anymore.
Sure.
Because you kind of have to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard, you know, like part of my identity died when like the band went away. Like Fear Before was the only band I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted 10 years. So
sure.
When it was gone, I just kind of, I got married and then my wife had an affair and then another affair and then I got divorced and then I just kind of disappeared into my own like depression. So
I get
This is my way out of that.
Awesome.
And it's taken 10 years to do. So, you know, it's a special thing that Marshall has like gifted me.
That's awesome.
I couldn't be more grateful. And it's like a slow burn. It's like, and now that it's started, I only know like one gear. It's like, now that it started, it's like, oh, well, we have three shows and it's like in 1 week, it's like, oh, we have a show in the Springs and then the next day it's Denver and then LA sold out show with Gatsby's American Dream.
Yeah.
And now we're nothing. And now Teenage Wrist is on tour for the rest of the year.
Yep.
And my drummer is in two bands and he's in Europe for it's like I only know like one thing or the other. And I'm like really trying to just like pace myself and figure it out. And I don't know how to do that.
That's tough, man. I get it. I mean, especially, you know, having, you know, been in a band for 10 years, that was, you know, like you had said from the word go, was out there writing and touring and, you know, just constantly filling up your time. So I can understand how going from a whole lot of something to a whole lot of nothing could definitely put you in a funk. But I know Mikey had a question for you. I didn't mean to cut him off.
Go for it.
You mentioned that Gatsby reunion show that you guys played and opened for. So like, you know, Fear Before and Gatsby, I wouldn't say are necessarily like comparables. Like they're not necessarily like similar, except like, I guess geographically, you know, they're in the Pacific Northwest and, you know, you guys being in Colorado, I'm sure you guys did pick up, you know, some similar, I guess, scenes at that point. But like, when did your relationship with those Gatsby guys really develop and keep going all these years later?
Well, back in like the early 2000s, nobody would tour with either of our bands. And we had a mutual friend named Garrett Sheeran, who had moved from the Pacific Northwest to Denver or Littleton and or Highlands Ranch area, whatever you want to call it. And that's kind of how we met. And I think that's really just how we connected as friends. And nobody would tour with our bands. So it was really through like things like mp3.com. This is like before MySpace, any of that like social media stuff. So it was really connecting a couple shows together. So we would play like, I think we would play maybe Salt Lake City and Aurora or, you know, Thornton or a couple Colorado, Salt Lake, Seattle, Redland, some suburb shows and string them together. bands that nobody would really give the time of day to. This is like Us, Gatsby's, and Anatomy of a Ghost, which is now Portugal the Man.
Sure. Yeah.
Another band from Lawrence, Kansas called Salt the Earth, which was on a label called Anxiety Records, which they did Furnace Fest. And they got us Anxiety Records got Fear Before and like Salt the Earth in like Best Buy's, like on like sampler CDs.
Oh wow.
Before we were even on Rise Records, before we were on Equal Vision, they would give a, like our sampler CDs away at the register before we were even in those stores.
Wow.
And like, those are just opportunities that like don't exist anymore.
Oh yeah. No way.
And that was back in like 2002.
Yeah, now the whole thing is getting on a playlist, you know, like that's kind of like the new getting on a sampler, you know, back in the day.
And you know, like right now, like if it, like Spotify has been really cool to us, like zero music news websites has written any articles about Memory Drip.
Okay.
The only thing that anybody has done for us has been things like you guys. Sure. Or our friend Dewey that was in Anatomy of a Ghost, Portugal the Man, his podcast, Peer Pleasure Podcast.
Okay.
He's done a podcast for us.
Awesome.
Another podcast, Lo-Fi Horror Guy, he did a podcast for us. So this is now my third podcast.
Nice.
So thank you guys so much. Like, but it's so weird. Like, you would think that, you know, having a, like a, you know, somebody like Marshall or, you know, my drummer, Justin from Caspian,
love Caspian.
You know, it's like having members of Fear Before, Teenagerist, and Caspian, somebody would write an article about it.
Yeah, you'd think it would generate some buzz, you know? It's
you have kind of have to have like somebody, some paying like person, like somebody writing an article for you to do it. It's really interesting.
It's all about who you know. You know, yeah. The music business, unfortunately, it's always been that way. It's, you know, I remember I was in like some like janky punk band for a while, and we put out like a split 12 inch, and we got like a little 2-paragraph blurb in like an alternative press, you know, like, and you know, we wouldn't have been on anybody's radar if it wasn't for the fact that like one of the guys in my band was like good friends with Scott Heisel, who was like writing for alternative press at the time. And he's like, yeah, you know, throw it my way. Like I'll, you know, write a review for it. And we were like, holy crap, you know, we're in alternative press. But you know, that's the truth of it, is like, if you don't really have that background of people, and especially like, you know, in a case like yours where, you know, granted Teenagerist and Caspian are active bands, but you know, like you being, you know, a decade out of it, you know, is kind of tough.
Yeah.
because all of the contacts that you may have, you know, made when you were in Fear Before are people that have, you know, since moved on themselves or, you know, are doing other things. So,
well, yeah, I'm an owl. I'm a,
who? Yeah, I get it. Yeah. But you know what though? I applaud you for you know, stepping out of the shadows per se and making music again, because if it's not for, you know, a band like Fear Before the March of Flames, like there are a lot of bands who probably wouldn't exist in the plane that they do today. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know what your take is on it, you know, being from, you know, inside the band and, you know, looking outwards, but looking outwards inside, you know, I always thought that you guys were kind of right ahead of the curve. Like, you know, I remember when Odd How People Shake came out, and I remember thinking like, you know, wow, this is really good. And it, you know, has, you know, some semblances of being melodic, and, you know, there's these really catchy choruses and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, Art Damage rolls around and it was just so much more visceral. But I feel like that transition, you know, writing post-hardcore and then kind of making it a little bit more abrasive was something that you guys hit on the head before a lot of other bands did. So, you know, I think there's like a legacy there. And I'm sure if you, you know, turn to some bands today, like even, you know, a Teenage Wrist, who, you know, they sound completely different than Fear Before ever did. But, you know, having a tattoo on his arm means that he obviously, you know, took something from you guys. And I'm sure a lot of other bands did.
Yeah, I am so proud of like what we did. And sure. I think the coolest thing that we were able to do is, you know, change it up.
Yeah.
I really, all the bands that I still love did change a lot between records, whether that's, yep, you know, like, whether that's like Bjork or like,
mm-hmm,
Beck or,
oh yeah, Beck for sure.
Even if you don't like every record, whether if it's like Smashing Pumpkins or Beck or, you know, any of those like legacy groups,
sure,
I think that's very important to mm-hmm, not like, even if you try to do the same record every time, it's not gonna be cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, no way.
Like, it could never be as cool. Even if you try to do that, it would totally suck.
I mean, I feel like there are some bands that do that, and not because they're necessarily a one-trick pony, but it's because, I mean, like, I'm gonna catch flack for this, but like, I have to say it. I feel like a band that falls into that trope is like a NoFX, right? Like, I mean, as much as I love So Long and Thanks for All the Shoes and Punk and Drublic and War on Errorism and all these great records, I think that like, if you took songs from each record and put them on a playlist, I think the only way you would decipher that they're different entities is just like the production value. And that's not, yeah, necessarily,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because I love to listen to NoFX, because at least with NoFX, like, I know that if I haven't listened to Punk and Drublic in 5 years, like, I'm going to turn it on and I know exactly what I'm going to get.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm going to get this cohesive, awesome punk record that, you know, has transcended,
yeah,
things. And, you know, but I think the beauty in music is watching bands change over time, you know, because the reality is, if you write a record when you're 21 and now you're going into the studio to write a record when you're 35, like, there's just no way, there's no, that 14 years that you've lived, there's just no way that you're going to be able to capture whatever lightning in a bottle that you had when you were that, you know, 21. Yeah. And I always kind of wonder too, you know, to jump off of that, and I'll ask you this question, you know, from the beginning of the cycle to the end of the cycle, you know, I remember reading somewhere that you guys had kind of made a conscious decision to not play stuff off of Odd How People Shake. Now, I guess, was that just because you guys had felt that you'd matured past it? Or was there another reason that you didn't want to really have those songs in the cycle?
Yeah, and I think that was another reason that we did do the name change. We thought we wouldn't mm-hmm, have to play those songs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we went back on that a couple times.
Yeah, I know you guys have played Brightside a couple of times, right? Like, that's like kind of the one that made its way through.
Yeah. And then, you know, those, the thing about some of that stuff is, you know, it is camp. So it's like, it's not even like, you know, some of that stuff is like written, you know, just about like horror movies. So it's like not even like real life experience. So if once you get some of that stuff under your belt, you kind of want to only write about that. And maybe like, maybe that changes things, and maybe you like, maybe it doesn't like reflect who you are as a person, or like, or like, what your mission statement might want to be. So, if you kind of like say you're on a tour where you only get a half hour and you just put out, you know, an album like the Always Open Mouth.
Yeah. You want to play that music.
And you know, you're gonna give away 3 to 5 minutes to something like that. It just doesn't quite add up. So that's kind of where the name change made sense to us. And I don't regret that, but nobody's gonna really understand it, and it'll never quite add up to anybody in the long run anyways. So it's like,
I kind of think it's a tough thing, right?
It'll never make sense to me, and it'll never make sense to anybody else either. So it should just kind of, I always kind of wished it could be two bands and we could do two different tours or two different sets.
Yeah.
And that's just like another lofty goal that is just like, I wish I could do that. I wish I could just go on tour with my own band and do two sets and, you know, take a 15-minute breather and then come out and play another set of a different, you know, era.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that. Mikey and I are both from Long Island, and
downtown.
Yo, dude, there's a video.
Love that venue so
I gotta find it somewhere. There's a video of you guys playing, and very clearly me like dancing.
Hell
like,
yeah.
I think it's my buddy Devin. At the downtown, yeah. I think it was the Evergreen Terrace tour.
That's cool.
If I'm not mistaken.
You have to send that to me.
Yeah, if I can find it, if my buddy can find it, it was it's pretty awesome. So one last question for you, just because this is another, you know, piece of curiosity for me. So I know the first, you know, I was just doing a little bit of research, kind of going back, and so it looks like the first headliner that you guys did was the band I wanted to talk to you really was about Hot Cross. And I think it was Hot Cross and I think 65 Days of Static, which is a pretty, pretty gnarly tour package. But Hot Cross, man, I mean, like, you know, so I don't know.
Was that with, who else was that with?
Tom didn't do that much research, clearly.
I found it. I think This Will Destroy You was on it with you guys too.
Okay, yeah.
So the question I had really about Hot Cross is, I mean, like, so, you know, you guys being like kind of a mid-2000s, you know, experimental post-hardcore band, I mean, now you've got Hot Cross on the road with you. And I mean, like, they've got dudes that were in like Satia and like all of these like instrumental screamo bands that, like, you know, were in the 90s, like nobody cared about them. You know, they had such a small, you know, like Discord following, and it was like that was it. But, you know, now the 2000s come along and a lot of bands are taking what they had done, you know, Joshua Fit for Battle and Satia and Page 99 and all those kind of screamo bands, and are now making it a little bit more mainstream. So I just wanted to know, like, did you ever get to have any like cool conversations with them about what music was like, you know, a decade before you guys? And, you know, did you end up getting to have any of those conversations with those guys?
No, you know, like, they're like way more down to earth, and I don't know if we really got into too much of like the old stuff.
Got it.
It was, they could have been like totally closed off, and if they wanted to be, and not even talk to us if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But they were just very open and awesome. Just very just embraced, just being
sweet, very
kind and open
awesome.
To us. And they didn't, I don't know, all the bands that we toured with were just so nice to us. And we were pretty young back then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's weird because, you know, now I'm 40 now, and
sure.
You know, I look at bands now and I don't, when I see them on stage, I'm just like, I don't even know how old anybody is anymore. I can't tell. I just can't tell how old anybody is anymore.
It's a tough thing, man. It's, you know, when
it's like watching hockey, truly, like when you
look at
the like
watching hockey is way sadder. It's way sadder.
Guy in the league is now like retiring, and he was a goalie. He's like,
it's sad. I mean, like when I throw on
that moment though,
when I throw on hockey,
realized that we were older than pretty much every NHL player,
the entire NHL.
Yeah, it hit, and then it was like, ah, do I still wear like jerseys of these 18 and 19 year olds? And I kind of just accept it. Yeah
I mean, that's the scary thing about getting older, is just like, you think everything gets older with you, but the reality is, you know, you've got, you know, a kid like Owen Power, and I can finally say like kid and mean it, because he's like 20 years old, and you know, like, he's becoming, you know, one of the best players in the NHL. I mean, you've got your
rules.
Yeah, he's so good. And I mean, like, but you've got all of these young guys. I mean, you've got your, you know, and even if they're a little on the older side, but like, you know, you think of Dreisaitl and Nugent Hopkins and like all those, you know, people playing on Edmonton, and they're all young and they're all just like so good. And it's just like, you can't imagine. And it kind of makes you think like what a guy like Gretzky or Lemieux like think about these, like these new kind of generation of players, because they're so much different, you know, like you, there's not a chance you could do what Gretzky did. Like, you couldn't just camp out behind the net and not get blasted into oblivion these days. Like, you just you can't do it, you know?
Yeah. So it's a different,
it's a whole different beast, and it really is. But, you know, I love to see the progression of things, whether it's in music and hockey, and you get to see it in a lot of cool ways. But before we go on, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about one of our really cool sponsors, Raycon. They are a really cutting edge company, and they make some really, really incredible, you know, audio components, headphones and earbuds. So, you know, if you're getting a coffee that's like $5 and our bank accounts are always, you know, depleting, we're entering what we like to call a dupe session. You know, most products do the same thing, but are priced differently solely based on the brand name. So a good duplicate or a dupe is really crucial for getting the highest quality at the best price. And one dupe that you should definitely not sleep on are the Raycon wireless earbuds. They're premium audio at the perfect price points. You can listen to whatever you want, when you want, without breaking the bank. So for instance, you know, I could tell you that I just spent about $150 on a pair of Sony over-the-ear headphones. Love them to death, but, you know, I don't like to take them anywhere with me or anything like that, you know. So having a pair of inexpensive earbuds that you can just throw in your pocket, you know, kind of your everyday earbuds, are a really good thing. And, you know, Raycon's mission is kind of to prove that you don't have to spend an arm and a leg to get quality sound and smart tech listening features. So you can get a pair and a spare and probably still pay less than, you would with some of those other bigger brands probably pay less than what I paid for my Sony headphones. But in this economy, every purchase needs to be perfect. Raycon offers buy now, pay later options. Right now, you can pay as low as $18 at checkout. They have an easy and free return guarantee, 2 years of product protection insurance for just a few bucks extra, and they offer free domestic shipping and flat international shipping, which is awesome. They have over 50,000 five-star reviews, which is awesome. You know, in this day and age, you know, having those reviews is integral to, you know, being in having a great product. You know, they have noise isolation, awareness mode, crystal clear call quality if you're going to make any calls in 8 hours of playtime, which is awesome. So go to buyraycon.com/THPN. So again, that's buyraycon.com/THPN today. Get 15% off your Raycon order. It's buyraycon.com/THPN for the Hockey Podcast Network.
All right. And now a quick word from our sponsor, DraftKings.
That's so many ads.
During the hockey playoffs with DraftKings Sportsbook. New customers.
Playoff money.
Yep. Can make a $5 bet and score $150 in bonus bets instantly.
Hell yeah.
So the conference finals are set. We have Florida and Carolina, Vegas and Dallas. So it's a perfect time to just throw down some money on these conference finals. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code THPN. New customers can make a $5 hockey playoff bet and score $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Massachusetts, call 800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelpline.com. Or in New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 and older in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details and state-specific responsible gambling resources.
Great read. You're getting so good. So of the four teams that are left, you might know the answer to this, Mikey, because I'm racking my brain and I can't think of it. But between the four, obviously Vegas never having won a cup, but what was the last year? Was it 1999 or did the Canes win?
Canes won after 2000. Yeah, the Canes would be the last team of the four to win the cup.
Yeah.
Florida has never, obviously.
Yeah, and I remember when
Vegas
they got
has
to,
never.
Yeah, Florida got to the finals with Colorado, right? In 96, I think it was.
Yeah, I think the NHL is probably happy. Yeah, I think the NHL is probably happy with the teams that have advanced because they're non-traditional hockey markets.
Stoked.
Yeah,
of course he is. Yeah, he's got to be. And, you know, and the fact that, you know, we're seeing, you know, no one from the original six, you know, unfortunately, you know, the Avalanche got, you know, dusted out, but, you know, that's through no fault of their own. I mean, you guys couldn't stay healthy, but... You know, you look at all the teams that were in the playoffs that really, you know, people were looking at as big time contenders. You know, it was Edmonton, it was the Rangers, the Devils. You know, all of these teams that everyone was like, oh, they could run away with this, and here we are with a Canes team that's been dynamite. And I hate to say that because as an Islander fan, it pains me. But I mean, like, watching them play is just like unreal. And then the Panthers.
Yeah, they've simplified. They're down to a science, and they look good. Teravainen's back.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be good for them.
Yeah,
that's going to be a good series.
I think so.
Florida's rolling though. So
yeah,
if Tkachuk can have a better series though, he looked like garbage.
He did.
The last series. So I don't know. I don't bet though. I'm just not a betting man. And if I was a betting man, I would have just lost all my marbles.
When you think about the four teams that are left, like for a non-hockey fan, there's not like a superstar name on any of the four teams.
Yeah, it's not good for anybody who's not a hockey fan. That's the thing about it that I don't like. Yeah. That's that's probably not good for a non-hockey fan to just be like, who are these teams? Like,
yeah, I think that's going to be tough.
What is that swirly team?
If you end up getting a cat team, a Florida Dallas or a Carolina Dallas Cup Finals, like for hockey fans, be great to watch. But yeah, for non-hockey fans,
I really don't think anybody outside of hockey could tell you what any of the logos are.
Oh no, absolutely not. They did a really, there's a really funny, my wife is on TikTok and she like just does all this ridiculous stuff. And there's this family and it's a dad and it's like his son and the son's girlfriend, and the dad and the son are like really Italian, like, right. So they do this thing where the son sits down and shows the dad all of these NFL logos. And he's like, tell me what team that is. And he's like, the only one I think he gets right is like the Cowboys or the Jets or something. But I mean, like the answers that he came
tracks,
up with.
That tracks.
Dude, the answers he came up with were just unreal. I forget what he called the Falcons. I think he called them like sick looking paper birds or something. And it was just like, okay. So I would love to see someone do that with the NHL logos. Just like ask like some poor unsuspecting like college girls.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it would be.
You know, because like you know the Avalanche, they'd be like, oh yeah, the A's, they're the snowy A's.
Or just read the Carolina Hurricanes roster. Like, I won't even try to. It's intense.
One time, I was in backstage like hanging out with Every Time I Die and Goose. He was our drummer from Fear Before. Yeah. Well, he was in Every Time I Die, and Jordan is an amazing artist, the guitar player from Every Time I Die. Mm-hmm. And they're in an amazing new band called Better Lovers.
Yeah, great band.
They just started their new project. But he did like art projects on like drum heads and stuff. And he was doing just like a, you know, the piece of the day. And he was drawing an Every Time I Die logo meshed with an Avalanche logo.
Oh, I love that.
And he was drawing it, and I don't know how many hours, or you know, maybe an hour plus, and he was drawing it, and he was like, oh, it's a puck. And he was like, you know, it was like he didn't even realize that the Avalanche logo, and it was an Avalanche, and it was a puck in the Avalanche.
Dude, I'm today years old when I just figured that out.
Oh, you didn't know either?
I'm looking at your sweatshirt as you're telling this story, and I'm like,
it's a puck.
It's a puck. I'm just realizing that now, too. And I'm a hockey fan.
To me, it's 90s clip art to me.
It kind of takes away from the logo now that I know that it's so corny.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought it needs a revamp, but you can't really, there's not many ways you can retool an Avalanche on a jersey.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
One of the worst jerseys of all time ever. I honestly don't think you can make a worse jersey is the Stadium Series jersey that they did recently. It's just that it's crippling. I'll pull it up on my phone. It's like the worst jersey of all time.
Yeah, I think they like purposely try to make those jerseys look like traditional, because obviously so many original six teams and everything played in them. But like a team like Colorado that doesn't have like a long, rich history, like how are you trying to make that look traditional?
That sucked. That yeah. was like the worst.
Oh, thing yeah. I've ever seen. I'm looking at him right now. Like I see a Kale McCarr one, and it's just like
brutal.
Yeah. You know, it almost looks like to me like they're trying to make them look more like
basketball or some
shit. Yeah, like basketball or even soccer or something. Like trying to just make it look like more. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. But like what does make sense to me though is when you think about it, right? Like the 90s were very, yeah, you know, being a kid in the 90s, it was like shit had to catch your eye, right? So I
mean, everything was trying to really copy the Mighty Ducks, like, because that was so successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
actually,
like that's where the fishermen came from.
And there it is. There it is. Dude, I'm telling you, like, it's like that.
Yeah. I'm from Orange County, and I did get into hockey because I was from Orange County, and that's not a bad thing, but that's an iconic, like perfect logo.
Yep.
I think they need to go back to that shit. I hate the fucking, I can say
fucking. Yeah, no, you can. Yeah.
Okay. You're good.
That duck foot D bullshit needs to go away. I love that purple and teal that they had.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was perfect. I know that I don't know what Disney owns of that can't come back or whatever, but I loved it. It's iconic, whatever. They really need to just like rebrand, but they won a cup on that, so
yeah, exactly. It
sucks that that's like kind of like it's still part of their legacy, so
for sure. And that's totally fine. Like, I think it's fine when teams kind of develop different identities over the years, like maybe not the original six teams, like. You know, that's tradition, like kind of keep that as is. And, you know, every once in a while have fun with like the reverse retros and things like that. But I think having a rebrand every once in a while, sometimes some stick and sometimes some are awful. Like the Buffalo Sabres has done it. They've done it multiple times.
Those white gold Buffaloes are beauties. And those black, like the black evil ones were so sick. My dad's from Buffalo, and they're my third team, and I grew up as a Bills fan because my dad's from Buffalo. I lost all my allowance money as a kid to all my dad's friends as a kid.
Yeah,
for all my dad's Super Bowl.
Oh yeah. Like, parties, those four Super Bowls, no rings.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, you've got your Landy jersey up there. Are you, do you consider yourself like, are you a jersey collector? Do you have a lot or?
I do not. This is really, I had Ducks jerseys that were all knockoffs that were like the iron-on ones that peel, like, I played, I never had enough money to play as a kid. I played roller street hockey as a kid in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I played goalie, and like I stuffed a pillow in my jerseys. And I had so many those like orange balls hit the Ducks logo that they all just like came off, and I'd have to iron it back on all the time. This is really the only jersey that I still have and the only real one I've ever owned.
If I had the money, I would jersey collect. Like, I know I mean, I'm bad when it comes to collecting as it is. Like, I'm a huge record collector.
Yeah, and, me too. I have probably, you know, 1,500, 2,000 records, but I only have one real jersey.
If I would have kept my collection that I had originally, plus what I have now, I'd probably be somewhere near like the 1,500 mark. I'm at like 550 right now, and I do live in like a 600 square foot apartment, so I can't really get anymore because my wife will murder me. But but you know, it's so funny because like I have like a system. Like I'm just going to show you my system real quick because I got a record right here. So I just bought this Midtown record, right? It's fucking great.
Oh,
record.
Yeah.
Save the World, Lose the Girl, right? So if you can see right here, I'll bring it close to the thing. So can you see it? I got these labels that I put on them. There we go.
Yeah, there we go.
So I label them what press they are, what color they are, out of what they are, and put them in sleeves. And then I, you know, when I get a chance, I throw them in my cabinets and all that fun stuff. But so cool way to transition is by talking about, I missed it. It was just not on my radar, but Equal Vision, I know, just recently did a repress of Art Damage, and they sold out, and they're not easy to get.
Yeah.
They're not easy to get, man. I don't know if you're a Discogs guy like I am, and like you go on there and you tinker around a little bit, but like the last time I was on there, man, they were like, and I'm talking about the new ones, like not like the old school picture disc or like, you know, some of the, you know, original presses that you had. I'm talking like the new ones that just came out like 3 months ago. They're up on Discogs for like 60, 70 bucks. They're like,
it's crazy.
It was such an iconic record, you know? And I love when labels, you know, repress stuff like that because it allows more people to get their hands on it.
But yeah. It's better than letting it just go up and up and up.
But like, I guess, you know, not knowing like the ins and outs of the music industry, how does that work? Like, does Equal Vision approach you and say, hey, we want to, you know, repress Art Damage? Do you guys have any insight that you want to give us or anything like that? Or do they just do it?
Not really. They kind of just say, like, you still owe us $100,000.
Okay, then.
we're gonna like chip away at that. Well, here's the thing is like, we still owe them, but they've still made $1 million off of us, but we still owe them.
Yeah, that's what I think is always going to be the case. You still owe anybody, but
we
luckily
still owe them because we still borrowed and they still made.
Yeah. You know, right.
Love them. I won't get that like skewed.
No, of course.
It's very,
it's a shady business.
It is. And I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But any money that you take from a label, you owe back. So I get it, but that label business is outdated. And and it's not fair. So it's okay. I wouldn't sign a deal with them again.
Sure.
And that's why my new band's not signed to them.
Good. Now, does Memory Drip have distribution or anything like that yet, or no? Are you guys still
working? No. It's a better deal to just put it out yourself and like spend $1,000 and have nobody hear it, mm-hmm. and only like 1,000 people hear it.
Yeah.
Then, you know, 100,000 people hear it and all the quotation marks I put out. Exactly. And to owe a label $100,000 10 years later while they still made all their money. So,
well, I
still love Dan Sanshaw, our A&R guy. I still love him and his family to death. And a lot of the people who work at that label, I love a lot of their bands and legacy bands. I love a lot of the people who work there. A lot of the guys, the band members of Bane.
Oh, yeah.
that still work there. And a lot of like my friends, Anthony Green, I mean, there's too many people. Bear vs. Shark, I love those guys.
Yeah, they just got a repress too, like today.
It just dropped. Yeah, Bars of Gold, their new band.
Yep.
Are new, not new, but like their present band. I mean, I'm trying to just like.
Yeah, Equal Vision was a, it is still, but was like a tremendous, just a hard hitter. Tremendous. I mean, like,
yeah. I don't want to disparage anybody. I just want to say that, like, maybe it's not the right fit if it doesn't make sense. I just want to put out music and not owe anybody money. I don't know.
It seems like that's a novel concept.
We spent money though, like it's probably our own fault, but we were allowed to spend that money.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know.
We had a conversation with that band, The Sleeping, a couple weeks ago, and you know, they were on Victory, and I mean, you know, I'm sure you've heard the horror stories of bands that were on Victory, and you know, the kind of
we're nothing like our Equal Vision is a billion million trillion
oh yeah
trillion, oh yeah trillion, gajillion trillion million gajillion times better than anything like that.
And it's such a shame, because like when we were talking to them, one of the things they had told us was they're like, they don't even like, we've talked about this on a couple of different episodes, but like Victory has their catalog, and Victory has done whatever they've done with their catalog, so much so that like, even if they wanted to, they couldn't take their own music and like press it onto an anniversary vinyl or like do something like that. Like everything has to go through Victory. And of course their whole catalog is locked up in a vault somewhere, sitting around not making any money. You know, so the whole idea is like, if Victory was smart, they would just be like, oh, The Sleeping's back. Let's just put all of their records out on vinyl. And, you know, granted, will The Sleeping see a dime of that? No, which sucks, which is miserable. But, you know, at least they could capitalize on it. But I feel like you're correct in saying that, like, the way of the record label, you know, then versus now. And there are some labels that are getting it right. Pure Noise being one of those who like does great by all of their artists, but like it's archaic. It's an archaic model, you know, and it's, you know, and I think more and more bands, even when they're young, are learning to see what's on the paper they're signing, because, you know, so many artists when they're young, when you're 18 and 19 and, you know, you show up to a record label and they're like, hey, we're, you know, we want to sign you and we want to give you guys money to make music. You know, the stars in your eyes are just like, you know, like, oh my God, someone. But then you're not looking at what you're signing, and you're signing away your rights to your music, your merchandise, and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, it's a predatory business, and it's got to change.
Yeah. I think the problem that Fear Before had is we just overspent, like, I mean, the only problem we had is we spent 2 months in the studio for Always Open Mouth, and then a month for the self-titled record.
Sure.
And we changed our name, and we spent, you know, maybe like $30,000 on a music video, and I think $20,000 of that was our own money.
Oh wow.
Jeez. And you know, and then we bought a Sprinter first year.
Okay.
And the transmission died.
Ugh.
In the first year, and then we had to rent an RV to stay on tour. And then Renting RV to stay on tour, and then we backed into Norma Jean's bus with that RV, and then we couldn't pay our merch bill on that tour. Damn. So like at the end of our like CD release tour on Always Open Mouth, I think we were like 100 grand in debt. Ugh, so geez. It's like it took us a year and a half to even like pay that down.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then like by the end of that, I think that's when like Adam, my guitar player, put us on indefinite hiatus and we never came back.
Yeah.
So it's like I never got to get us out of that because it wasn't my decision. So
sure. Sure. That's so tough. You know, yeah. I think that's a lot
like,
of
it only takes one person to make a choice like that. So yeah. It's not like it's just not a fun thing when
it only takes
one person to like make a choice like that, and it's like sad at the end of the day.
Agreed.
Because it's like a marriage. It only takes one person to end it.
It's true. Very true.
And I just love everybody that ever worked in like for us and with us. And I don't regret any of those like awesome times. And I don't like have any like ill things to say about any of that stuff.
Sure.
It's just kind of like hard.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I get it. It is. All right. So I have one last question for you. I'm sure Mikey's got one last question for you, but I always like to ask this just because it is kind of a very, very interesting one. So let's just say you find yourself at an Avs game and, you know, someone from the office like comes down and is like, hey, we're going to play a Fear Before song. Which one are we going to play? So of your whole catalog, if you could pick one song that you'd want played at an Avs game, goal song, intermission, whatever it might be, which one are you picking?
Damn. Let's see here. It's got to be a fucking banger.
You got a lot of those, so I know you've...
It's gotta be a like a posy one. I'm trying to think of the song titles right now.
No, you're good, man.
Maybe God Awful Truth.
That's a good one.
Just because it's a fiery one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. People are going to get really pissed off and probably not like that one.
I don't know, man. Like, that's why this podcast is still going, is because there's clearly a huge crossover between alternative music and hockey. So, like,
yeah.
We actually, like, it surfaced about, like, 2 months ago. There's this hardcore band in Jersey called Oceans of Illusions, like super heavy, that played the intermission at Prudential Center for where the Devils play, and like full on mosh pits during intermission.
That's so awesome. Like, oh yeah, I saw that. That was awesome. In the concourse, right?
In the concourse.
Yeah. I love that. I thought that was awesome. People were like, what the hell? Like, that serves her like, what were they saying? I saw the comment section. It was super divided. You're right. They just did not get it.
Yeah. But like at the same time, what other professional sport would even let a band like that in the building?
I was like, what the fuck is up, Denny? So that was like the epitome of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you'd be surprised, man. They're playing some cool music in NHL arenas.
That's awesome.
So I got, so I did forget about this. So we normally have a third co-host, but unfortunately he's kind of sick with the flu. So he wanted to ask a very specific question. So I'm going to ask it. He said, this is what he said. He said, please someone ask about Tourette's guy and how they were on the clip with it. So I guess you got to tell us that story.
I tell you what, all that took was $200 and a case of beer.
Oh my. Incredible.
And it ruined his whole persona. Like, we ruined that whole shtick because it ruined the whole thing, because up until then everyone believed it, but and then we ruined the whole vibe because everyone was like, oh, it's just not real.
It's just a character.
I felt bad because up until then it was so believable, and then it was totally edited because we could not play what they sent us.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was like, oh shit, he was dropping the hard F.
And
it was like,
that's what that guy likes to do. He drops hard F's and hard this's and
dude, I don't even know who that is. I'm guessing it's like
you haven't seen
No.
Go look up Tourette's guy.
Look it up. Yeah, it's like you'll chuckle, but like you'll also be like,
ooh, cringe.
Like, yeah, he was saying some cringy shit. But
yeah, it was like early YouTube. We were watching a lot of like the G.I. Joe videos, like those overdub, like
that's where the hate kid on the computer came from.
Yeah. So that was one of the things we were watching. We got like song titles from things like that, and we're like, oh, maybe we can get Tourette's guy to do a commercial for us. And Equal Vision was giving us like $200 budgets for things, so we did a commercial. They gave us $200 and we rented we bought like 5 gallons of milk and a clown or a cow costume, and we did the gallon challenge. All of us did the gallon challenge, and MTV2, Fuse, and what was the other fucking like Canadian music?
Much music.
All of those aired our commercial of us puking the gallon challenge.
Incredible.
That would never air.
No.
Ever. Nowadays, but in the mid 2000s, we were all just puking up milk, and and that was our commercial for a $200 Equal Vision budget. And then the other one was Tourette's guy. That was just, I don't know how we got that, but we all did offer it on email. So
hell yeah, sweet. Awesome. So.
Yeah, I just have one final question for you, David. You know, we talked about how the conference finals are all laid out for us. So who do you think's getting out of the East, and who do you think's going to get out of the West? Or, like, not necessarily who you think's going to get out, but who would you like to get out?
I mean, it's tough in the East. It's hard to bet against the Florida Panthers right now.
Yeah, with who they've taken down already.
Like, yeah.
They're prepared.
I like how the Hurricanes have simplified their game, though. I just hope that we're going to get game sevens out of this. I don't know. I'm not a gambling man. I just hope for game sevens out of both of these. I think that Vegas looks better on the West side. But again, who knows? It's going to come down to goaltending. I don't really like the way that Ottinger has been playing lately, and I wouldn't bet on Aiden Hill, but Ottinger hasn't looked good either, so it's really a roll of the dice right now. Shit, it's weird. It's not the way I would have drawn it up. So it's just a weird
year. It is, but well, you know,
I like it too. Anyone that would say like that they had these four teams left is a complete liar.
They would be lying to you.
Yeah, they're lying. There's no way. And you know, I guess just like based on, you know, some people that we've had on Bar Down Breakdown, like I'm hoping for a Florida Dallas Stanley Cup final just for our homies, Dave Courtney and Kyle over at the Stars. So like, I feel like that'd be really cool. And also, you know, they might put out some cool content.
Yeah. I mean,
with our genre of music.
I don't know. I think it's cool that, that Bobrovsky's had a bounce back year. Somebody who's really like totally gotten the, like, you know, the bounce back after taking the bag, after, you know, totally not having any good years in Florida. It's really crazy that, you know, he's pretty much been a third string goalie basically, and now just really carrying the team.
Yeah.
They gave him enough money and enough years. You would hope so, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. So I don't know. We'll see.
We're gonna put it all together. Before we get going, for Memory Drip, socials, anything like that, did you want to just let our listeners know where we can find you guys and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's just at Memory Drip. We just put out a cassette. We only did 100 of them. We're going to try to do vinyl this year. Really, the other boys, Marshall is going to be full-time touring in Teenage Wrist, and Justin in Caspian in Soam, his other band Soam, S-O-M. So check them on tour all year. But just Memory Drip is the band. We just put out our self-titled EP a couple weeks ago.
Sweet.
And it's just a 7-song. We did it all ourselves.
Awesome.
And really just going to be writing ourselves again this year. And
cool. Awesome, yeah. Man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on here with us. We really appreciate it. And, you know, great episode, a lot of really great content on here. And, you know, what we'll do is as this time progresses.
This salary cap is going to be so tough for the Avs.
Oh yeah, we'll take Devontae's back. You can send that our way.
Fuck off. We'll take middle them. Six. The Avs cannot do anything with their middle six. I'll take Chris McFarland's job this off season. Joe Sakic can hire me this off season because I don't have a job. So I'll be taking his calls.
Hell yeah.
I'm open. I'll figure it out.
Dude, imagine you get a call from Joe Sakic and he's like, "Oh, were you the singer of Fear Before the March of Flames?"
I'm open. My number is no, seriously. There's something going on with the Avs and not hiring anybody for their middle six. They've been afraid to spend any money on their middle six for years. They let everybody go and it's troublesome. I don't know what it is. There's a fear there and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, the Islanders are basically made up only of middle six players, so we have that is true. Plenty that is... to spare. Like you want yeah, like Cal Clutterbuck, Josh Bailey,
yeah,
like, you name them, we got plenty of them.
Yeah, we do, and sadly enough, that's probably going to stay that way for until
they retire. Lou
decides to go somewhere else, but that's another topic for another
bunch of shaven weirdos.
I know, it's just
unbelievable. So dumb.
You shave your face.
Yeah, they thought they were going to get Kadri. Yeah, right.
Dude, there are so many people the Islanders fans thought we were going to get Kadri. We thought we were going to get Aaron. We thought we were going to get all these people, and we got Bo Horvat. So
make Kadri shave every day. Get real.
Yeah, right. No way. They would have put an addendum in his contract for that for sure. But hell yeah, man! This was such a great conversation to have, David. Thank you so much. All the best. With Memory Drip. And we will catch you. Hopefully, we'll get you on next season, and hopefully, the Avs will have a better one.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
For sure, man. Sick.
All right. Take care, man.
Take care.
You too.